Welcome to Care to Lead, your path to leadership success. Brought to you by the Vizient Nurse Executives Network.
Hello, everyone. I'm Dr. Barbara Seymour, Associate Vice President of Member Connections at Vizient. And today's guest is Dr. Karen Grimley, Chief Nurse Executive for UCLA Health and the Assistant Dean of the UCLA School of Nursing. Dr. Grimley is responsible for the professional nursing practice and care delivery across UCLA Health. She is dedicated to using resources and relationships to reinvigorate excellence, teamwork, and camaraderie, and has led the development of comprehensive strategies and programs to strengthen nursing and patient care. Dr. Grimley received a Bachelor of Science degree in nursing at St. Anselm College in Manchester, New Hampshire, and a master's degree in business administration from Anna Maria College in Paxham, Massachusetts, before earning a doctorate in nursing from Christine E. Lynn College of Nursing at Florida Atlantic University. In 2022, she was selected to be a fellow of the American Academy of Nursing. Welcome, Dr. Grimley.
Thank you, Barbara. Please call me Karen.
Karen, I've had the pleasure of hearing some of your story at a recent conference we attended together and would appreciate if you'd share your nursing and leadership journey with our listeners.
Just very quickly, started in New England in the critical care units as a nurse and did some work in rehab and detox, which is where I learned a lot about people. And then from there, grew into a management role in that particular hospital after 5 years in the emergency department. That was my clinical base. From there, working on my MBA, I ended up getting recruited down to Western North Carolina as a service line director, and then recruited to Florida as a chief nursing executive. In retrospect, every time I took a new position, I was building. First, I was building on my 2-to-1, the 2 patients I took care of in the intensive care, to the unit I took care of as a charge nurse, to the 60 nurses I took care of on my first inpatient unit as a manager, and the 40 patients that were on that unit, and so on. So each step I took, I grew in my responsibility and in my patient load, because I always look at nurses and patients as the people I'm responsible for in my job, to advocate for them and to make sure that they have what they need. That's been the course of my journey. After being in Florida for about 10 years, where I had the opportunity to not only be a nursing officer, but to be an operating and nursing officer concurrently, I took about 5 years and I consulted. And during that time, I worked on honing my skills as a better understanding resource utilization and optimizing resource use to expedite and improve workflow and efficiencies within a hospital or health system. That was really beneficial. Consulting is a tough line of work. I took a year off and went back to school full time to work on my doctoral coursework. I got tremendously bored and ended up taking a job at the University of California as a nursing officer, because after that 5 years as a consultant, I was driven to get back to that health system to help nurses really orchestrate change in a meaningful way for patients, but also for professional practice. So from UC Irvine for 5 years, and then up now to UCLA, where I've been for 8 years as both a nursing executive here for the health system and also the assistant dean for the School of Nursing. Both wonderful roles. They work together brilliantly. I've been able to enhance professional practice in a relevant and meaningful way because I can weigh in on school side and I can weigh in on health system side to bridge some of the challenges that we face as a profession, and then also to take that knowledge and enhance the way we teach care, teach how to deliver care, and the way we also deliver care.
Karen, take a moment and tell us a little bit about the work you're doing to promote wellness through safe work environment, psychological safety, and reducing workplace violence.
Helping nurses do the job they want to do and having patients receive the care that we want to deliver is paramount to me. But we can't do that as well as we'd like unless we have the right things in play. One thing we learned from COVID is people are a lot testier than they were prior to COVID. People are very anxious, they're frustrated, they're more terse in their conversations, and it's a harder environment. We have a lot of interaction with families and patients that we didn't experience in the past. A lot of harassing comments and sometimes violent outbursts by families and patients, and even colleague to colleague, we've had some tough conversations as well. It just sheds a light on the fact that we really need to understand our environment and make sure that people have what they need to feel safe. We put together a program here, and I'm very proud to be the sponsor and probably chief instigator around what we call A Safer You. It is a comprehensive compilation of all of the initiatives we have going on right now that contribute to improving the work environment or improving staff safety or staff well-being. All of those different initiatives, and there's about 60 of them, we've rolled them up into one initiative that's made up of different groups of activities. The whole purpose of that is to create an environment where people feel safe to do their work. And one of the things that is so critical to us to do that is to make sure that patients and staff not only feel physically safe, but they feel psychologically safe. To do that, you have to have a whole host of workforce strategies that lay into that. You need to have consistent staffing that is capable of providing the right level of care at the right time to the right patients. There's a whole group of activities around human resource development, onboarding, and orientation that I've laid in to support that psychological safety. Additional things are, how safe is it to walk in and out of our building? So concurrent with the workforce strategies around labor management, recruitment, and retention, we've built in things about how to better prepare those staff to understand a potential event or crisis in the making by teaching them de-escalation techniques, and by also providing them safety features within the organization, the environment, such as weapons detection systems at our entrances to our emergency department, staff assist buttons, wearable staff assist buttons, and also panic buttons in all of the different units and all of the different locations where issues of crowding or patient interaction can occur. So with that said, we've worked on the physical safety and we've worked on the psychological safety in a way that all comes together. What we've been able to find through frequent conversations and town halls with the staff is that they're starting to feel safe. That can be seen in our retention numbers and our vacancy numbers. We've come well below the national statistics now. Our turnover has fallen. I think we're at approximately 10% right now. The national average has been hovering around 22%. And our vacancy rate is probably about 7%, which is great. So we know people are choosing to stay here. And the best part about this, if you think about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, as soon as we have that consistent stabilization of safety and a feeling of safety in our environment, that's when we start to build our relationships. That's when we start to trust one another and build things together. And that's when we start to create that idea, that innovation, that freedom to think about changing things without repercussions. And that's when we start to climb Maslow's hierarchy to achieving high-end goals and high-end improvements in the reliability of the care we provide and journeys to zero harm and things like that. That's where I spend my time. Workforce strategies and environmental strategies done in partnership with the bedside nurse and the clinic nurse and all the different departments that intersect there to make a difference. The input from the staff, or what we like to call in the industry the end user, and input from the patients has allowed us to create an environment where people are able to start to relax and even thrive. So I'm very excited about that. And it's making a huge difference in everything we do. And it's all based on relationships. Creating an environment that provides opportunity to build relationships, to build trust, to innovate, and reach a level of excellence.
I can see why you're excited about it. And I love the term chief instigator. I'm probably going to borrow that. I always find it fascinating. We've had some parallel tracks in our careers, ICU nursing, some time in Florida, the consultancy. And in particular, you talked about your origins in nursing as a new grad in the ICU, which was very novel at that time. And I think about some of the novel issues that our new grads are facing in today's workforce. We know that new grad turnover continues to be higher than it's ever been. Where do you see opportunities to include well-being as part of nursing curriculum? And maybe think about treating well-being and practicing well-being as a skill.
It's hard. The nursing colleges actually has been doing a tremendous amount to overhaul curriculum. The AACE and AACN have done a lot of work for just that reason. They want things to be relevant, not only for the delivery of patient care, but for the development of the nurse. And what we're finding is the people that are going into nursing today have a much different perspective on what's important. And what I'm glad to see is that they're very focused on their well-being. We can all learn from that. Having grown up in an environment where we're always giving and weren't necessarily recognized for the extra things that we did that made the difference, always recognized by our patients, but not necessarily by organizations, we had a tendency to discount our work. It's what we do. I think that the new generation is teaching us that it's important to take a deep breath. I teach in the doctoral program, and even when teaching finance, we're taking time to talk through case studies and talk through activities where we're valuing the role of the nurse as an APP, an advanced practice provider, and at a DMP level to holistically care for their department or their patient group or what have you. And that requires developing a communication strategy. And in that communication strategy, we're learning to ask different questions. We're learning to value what we're sometimes called soft skills and intangibles as value. What we do now to assess quality goes beyond standard or traditional metrics. We're looking at other things now. The opportunity to really value patient experience and nurse engagement has really shifted us away from nurse-patient to human beings caring for human beings. And that goes all different ways. Some of the things that we've worked hard to do here and communicate to the School of Nursing in my position is through the work I do with clinical liaisons, finding people to precept and match with people looking for their clinical rotations or their precepted projects is an opportunity to find people who not only embrace the topic, they also embrace the development and the mentorship that they need to provide to that person who's the learner. And we're reinforcing that with how we're creating these clinical opportunities. That's one thing I do on the school side. On the acute care side or on the health system side, I'm making sure that we have different situations where we can orient student nurses or students in nursing to the patients they need to care for, but we are also immersing them in the environment in which they'll work. We have dedicated education units done in partnership with the schools of nursing where a group of clinical students will come into a rotation on a particular unit, spend their entire rotation there with nurses on the unit who act as essentially elbow support instruction for them. There's a clinical instructor from the school that's liaisoned with that group. What they learn is how the unit works, how people go to find resources, what resources are available, how to partner with nurses for mentorship opportunities and opportunities to partner with them on different committees and different initiatives to learn how to use their skills. So they're being recognized and rewarded while they're still students in a healthcare organization. It also creates a pipeline for them to find a job and a pipeline for us to recruit them. So from there, what we've noticed is our recruitment opportunities with the new grads we're hiring is great. We continue that precepted event when we hire them. They go into what we call a nurse residency program, and Vizient has a nurse residency program also. And in that nurse residency program, they're partnered with a mentor, and they're supported by our professional development specialists and educators throughout the course of a year. We have a competency-based orientation for the basic technical skills, but for a year, we offer a support group and didactics to help them build themselves up as confident, competent professionals, where they can take pride and have keen understanding and speak with confidence about their profession.
Great information and insights, Karen, and I love that you're recognizing the expanding role of the bedside nurse and how to support them holistically. And we've talked many times about the growing responsibilities and pressures of the nurse executive as well. It's not just a phenomenon for our bedside nurses. And some of the roles that may be surprising to people that don't work in healthcare or in nursing. Take a moment and explain to our listeners what some of those roles are and how has it impacted nurse leader well-being?
I think it's important for people to understand that nurse executives are healthcare executives. I've been an operating officer and a nursing officer concurrently at one of the roles I had in Florida. Operational jobs and health systems dovetail very nicely with nursing because nursing is hospital operations in a lot of respects, especially in an acute care environment. It's not unusual for a nurse executive to have any number of departments report to them. For example, right now, I have care coordination and spiritual care report to me here. In past lives, and even in this role early on, pharmacy reported to me. Actually, pharmacy's reported to me in a lot of my roles over the course of the years. The only department that's never reported to me in the course of my lifetime as a nursing officer is food nutrition services, believe it or not. I've had responsibility for all of the other departments that make up a health system, the acute care side of a health system. People, when they hear the term chief nursing executive, really need to ask about the role. My extra long title is chief nurse executive and associate administrator for patient care services. So in essence, that's what I do. And in the course of that responsibility, I'm asked to be directly accountable for different departments. I'm also assigned as executive sponsor to different initiatives and different activities outside of the organization. The role of the nurse executive is pretty extensive, much like the role of an operating officer is as well. Those two groups in a health system usually do 95% of all the operational work within the organization or have it report up to them.
Sometimes the well-being is just associated with ensuring that our partners and peers understand the work that we do and the breadth and depth of what is involved as the chief nurse executive. Just to pivot a little bit, one of your most endearing qualities is your sense of humor. We get to see that quite often through our network activities. How does this help you stay well in your stressful role as a nurse executive?
You really have to learn to not take yourself so seriously. And I'm only speaking about me to me. Maybe this comes with years of doing this. I'm not sure. But I've always been of the ilk that you really have to know what's important and understand where there's flexibility and also understand the value of levity in some of these really tense situations. To find a moment to tell a story or to make an offhand comment, of course, not at anyone's expense, or to maybe make a comment that kind of laughs at you. I didn't realize I was doing that. Can you imagine, right? It makes a big difference. It opens up the door for people to kind of take a deep breath and relax. One of the most important things you do as a healthcare leader is you have to measure the temperature in the room and you need to know how to bring it down. Humor does that very well. A level of informality when used appropriately does the same thing. Hosting conversations, showing up because things are going well or things are going, showing up when things are going bad, gives you an opportunity to establish yourself as a person. The ability to laugh at yourself lets people see you as vulnerable. That's important. People need to know they're working for a person or people. And then it's how do you show you care? And sometimes you show you care by helping somebody feel a little bit better about something that they thought went woefully wrong. And sometimes you do that with humor. I laugh because sometimes I think I could do a whole stand-up routine with some of the situations I've encountered. But right now, if I had to do one, I'd be at a loss.
I think you've done a great job and you've brought us full circle to that human-to-human connection and how that's important in our jobs as leaders and finding those bright spots in the middle of roles that are very serious and life-changing for the patients that we serve, but can also be bright and connected at the same time. So thank you for your thoughts on that. It's been a pleasure having you as our guest today. And thank you for all that you do to promote wellness for our nurses.
Well, thank you, Barbara. I really appreciate you taking a few minutes to invite me to share some of my thoughts.
And to our listeners, thank you for joining us. If you've enjoyed today's discussion, please subscribe to hear more Care to Lead podcasts. Like us and send us your comments. Care to Lead is your path to success and is brought to you by the Vizient Nurse Executives Network. I'm Barbara Seymour. Have a great day.